Corrine is going to come up in a moment to share a hospital story. And it is actually part of my hospital story from some time ago. The person who wrote the story, because I asked her to write it because it'll be self-explanatory, Janine Larson was at that time the president of the Woodinville Unitarian Universalist Congregation outside Seattle. And she was later district executive in the Pacific Northwest District. And she came over to support me after one of the many surgeries I had at the hospital. So, Corrine, would you please come up? And this does have a bearing on the second source around prophecy and, yes, evil.
This story happened in January of 2004. I'm going to take this off. Right after Alex started at the Woodinville UU Church as a consulting minister, he was in a horrible hit-and-run automobile accident as he waited patiently to turn left into our church driveway from the Woodinville Duval Road on Christmas Eve morning. He was airlifted to Harborview Medical Center from the scene and had several surgeries there to repair serious injuries and to his lower legs and multiple internal injuries as well. This final surgery was supposed to be, 3-4 hours, so I took some reading and went to sit at the hospital so that somebody he knew could greet him when he came out of the recovery room. However, the surgery ended up taking hours longer than expected, 12 or 13 hours or something like that. At any rate, all went well, and his surgeon came out to let me know Alex was fine and just about ready to be wheeled back up to his room. So I went to the recovery room to say hello and walk alongside him to see him settled in again. And I could tell right away that he was relieved to see me. He was making meaningful eye contact with me and pointing to the clock when he thought no one else was looking. I realized that he'd known how long the surgery was supposed to have been, and he was apparently pretty agitated that there was so much unaccounted time that had passed. I told him his doctor had advised me that they found a lot more to fix when they actually got in there, but had done a good job and all had gone well. So that's why the operation was taking so long. Alex rolled his eyes surreptitiously at that, glancing meaningfully at the clock. He was obviously trying to convey something to me. He stayed tense and quiet as I walked next to the gurney down the hall into the elevator and then stood with him while we waited for his room to be made up. He motioned frantically to me to listen to him. "I know why they kept me so long," he said urgently. "Yeah, Alex, I know," I said. "They needed to do more than they thought, so it took a little longer than expected." He shook his head, "No," emphatically, and made a little dismissive motion with his hand. Then he motioned me closer to hear him whisper, "It's mind control experiments," he said. "They're all in on it. Harborview, University of Washington, all of them." He shut up abruptly as an orderly walked by, trying to put on a very nonchalant, "there's nothing happening here" kind of look. He watched carefully for the guy to get out of range, and then he continued, We've got to make a plan. They're going to take over the world," he said. "I heard them talking about it. They thought I was asleep, but I heard every word. We got to get out of here. We got to warn everyone." I tried to explain to him that he was probably having some weird reaction to the anesthesia when an orderly came up to settle Alex back into his room. This went on for a while, and Alex determined to convince me that we were part of a big national conspiracy and surrounded by evil masterminds bent on world domination. And me trying to walk that fine line between agreeing with him and upsetting him. Finally, the effects began to wear off. So I left, and Alex somehow made it out of the hospital in one piece.
Thank you, Corrine. I still think it's true, but that's okay. Was I temporarily paranoid because of the anesthesia? Yes, of course. Did I speak words of prophecy when I was speaking to Janine? Well, I thought so at the time, even though it turned out to be false. Was I convinced that the University of Washington and Harborview Medical Center were evil and trying to take over our minds? Well, for about an hour or so, I believed that, and fortunately, I recovered. Imagine, though, if I had not recovered from that paranoia, but going through life convinced of those words and of that truth. Imagine never changing my mental state from that pattern of paranoia, anxiety, fear, and so on. I'm quite certain I wouldn't be standing here now. And I'm sure we all know people, tragically, who are in that mind state and can't get out of it for one reason or another. So the words prophetic and evil stand out for many people who read the second source. I'm going to take a few minutes to explore the word prophecy as part of our Unitarian Universalist faith, because frankly, I think the word evil deserves its own service, especially given the events in Europe the last 2 weeks. So when I spoke about the first of the six sources a few weeks ago, I wanted us to look closely at the important phrases. And so let's do that with this phrase, words and deeds of prophetic women and men. Now, as we all know, prophecy and prophets are usually equated with religion. Judaism and Christianity are rich with stories of prophets such as Isaiah and Jeremiah in the Hebrew Testament and the book of Revelations and the words of Jesus in the Christian Testament. In Islam, Muhammad is usually called the prophet because he spoke the words that became the Quran, the holy text that are the words of Allah. In our own lives, we can probably think of the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in his famous I Have a Dream speech. Those are words of prophecy. And of course, there are many others as well. And in fact, if you go online, you see a lot of words of prophecy. And prophecy doesn't just belong with religion. If prophecy is defined as a belief in a future, particular future coming to pass, then there can be prophecies that are positive and many that are negative. For example, there could be one prophecy that says, the Pittsburgh Pirates are bound to win the World Series this year. Is it true or false? No one knows, and I'm not going to say one way or the other. And there, of course, there are prophetic statements that miss the mark. Some years ago, the evangelical minister Harold Camping predicted on Christian Family Radio Network that on May 21st, 2012, that would be the rapture and the beginning of the final days. Didn't happen. And if you read in history, you know that a lot of, especially fundamentalist ministers, would prophesize the rapture and the end of the world at particular times based upon their interpretation of the Gospels. Here's another prophetic statement from the secular realm. Ken Olson, who was the CEO and founder of Digital Equipment Corporation, said this in 1977. There is absolutely no reason anyone would want to have a computer in their home. The company went out of business, by the way. And now, of course, as I said earlier, prophecy is all around us. On the internet, news, daily life, friends, enemies. Just look at the grim predictions of the climate crisis and the future of this country. Will we remain one country? The sudden start of the Ukraine-Russian war has brought back prophecies and worries of a new Cold War or worse. We don't know the answer to that. But what about here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Meadville and our surrounding area? What do we do about the word prophecy? How do we respond to the countless prophecies of war, climate disaster, and a broken America? Well, first thing we do, which we are all very good at, is to use critical thinking to see if such prophecies are based upon falsehood, emotional overload, or because everyone believes in them. Critical thinking has gotten a bad rap these days, but on occasion, it's important to be able to look at such suggestions, such prophecies, and ask, are these really true? On the other hand, if we listen to the body of scientific evidence, for example, we could reasonably conclude that the prophecies of climate disaster are likely to come true. On the other hand, if we rely on internet conversations and rumors or particular political stances that we may have, we may decide that all the warnings are wrong. And then we turn away from the evidence and ignore the danger signs because it can't possibly be real. But here's another type of prophecy that I think is very much part of your future as a congregation and also the Unitarian Universalist Association. The belief that beloved community will come to pass. Beloved community was one of the visions of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. during his ministry, and he spoke of it often, especially in his famous prophetic I Have a Dream speech. Now, you may have heard a few weeks ago that Rick Hoagram, our board president, did a service on love, and he mentioned the Eighth Principle Project. It is a proposed addition to the seven principles that we have now, and it uses in its body the term beloved community as a central theme. And I will read that eighth principle as the closing words this morning. So in the analysis of the Eighth Principle Project, there is a definition of what beloved community is in that new principle. Beloved community happens when people of diverse racial, ethnic, educational, class, gender, abilities, sexual orientation, backgrounds, identities come together in an interdependent relationship of love, mutual respect, and care that seeks to realize justice in the community and the larger world. Now, to me, those words sound like prophecy. The belief that something wonderful is going to happen. But we also have to work very hard. Those words remind me very much of the focus in the Unitarian Universalist community on dismantling white supremacy in this association, denomination now, and to be an example of how to demolish white supremacy for the rest of the world to see and to take on. On March 20th, two Sundays from now, you're going to hear Karen Carnahan speak to that theme. And Karen, you all know pretty well. She comes from Slippery Rock and has spoken here many times with a number of topics. Her title for the service will be The Theological Imperative of The Theological Imperative of Dismantling White Supremacy Culture. The description that she gave to us is, in general, people tend to think of tearing down systems of oppression as social justice work. As Unitarian Universalists, our call is to do this work as equally theological. And how do we engage in the holy work of dismantling white supremacy culture as individuals and a faith community? What I'd like to do now is give us a little bit of time for reflection, and I'm going to read this paragraph that is her blurb for that service once more, and maybe just reflect on the words that she's saying. In general, people tend to think of tearing down systems of oppression as social justice work. As Unitarian Universalists, our call is to do this work is equally theological. How do we engage in the holy work of dismantling white supremacy culture as individuals and as a faith community? So let's take a little bit of time and just reflect on those words before we do the offering.